Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at windbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. David Lowe, and this show has been pre-recorded, so please accept our apologies as we are not able to take live calls tonight. Let's start off our listeners with bringing everyone up to date on Forever Family Foundation happenings. We want to remind everybody to check the events page on our website regularly. For all information on events and announcements, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and all reservations for all events can be made online. We have two free meetings coming up in July. The Visionary Explorers on July 8th from 2 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 a.m. Pacific. This is an online group, and it requires pre-registration to come on into the group. The second free meeting is our Afterlife Discussion Group on July 8th in Miami, Florida, and that meets at 1 p.m. Our next webinar of the year is Receiving and Interpreting Spirit Communication. That's on August 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern. It features a Forever Family Foundation certified medium panel made up of Joanne Gerber, Dave Campbell, and Amy Utzman, who will be responding to attendees' questions following their presentation on the topic. Our annual grief retreat is coming up on July 14th through 16th and is sold out. For those who may have been closed out of this great annual retreat, do not fear, as we have arranged for a winter retreat in warm and beautiful Florida this coming January 5th through 7th, 2018. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend an all-inclusive weekend featuring spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joseph Scheel, Janet Nohavik, and Doreen Malloy, who will be working alongside Dr. Mo Hanna and the rest of our professional staff. The weekend also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. Our Oceanside New York event on August 25th, Visitation Rites, with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Lynn LeClaire, is all sold out. However, we do have a fabulous New York event set for Sunday, October 29th. The Afterlife Luncheon is a five-hour event that includes a scrumptious lunch. Join us as New York Times bestselling author Leslie Kane, author of Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife, will be joined by extraordinary medium Laura Lynn Jackson, author of New York Times bestseller The Light Between Us, Stories from Heaven, Lessons for the Living, for a compelling afternoon of learning and spirit communication. And please, 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 help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, great nonprofits, and WellZoo. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And as you mentioned, we have a great guest tonight, you know, Dr. David Lowe. So we'll go to a quick break, and then we'll bring on Dr. Lowe. So stay with us. We'll be back in a couple.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Dr. David Lowe received his PhD in religious studies from Temple University and was an adjunct professor at various universities teaching religion and psychology courses for about 10 years. He has a varied background. He was a drug counselor for 7 years. He lived in both Eastern and Western spiritual communities. He currently lectures. He does dream work and spiritually related counseling. His book, which we're going to discuss tonight, is Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice, an informal textbook for discerning seekers. And Dr. Lowe's website is David Lowe, David, L-O-W, MSPhD.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Lowe.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. It's great to be here with you tonight.
And great to have you. And I guess a good place to start, you know, it's been said by many that spirituality is religion without rules. Would you agree with that?
Well, not really. Spirituality, as it's more broadly understood, is pretty much anybody's orientation about anything in religion informally, in which case you're absolutely right. But there is a deeper sense in which there are laws and rules, if you will, to spirituality, just as there are with religion, but they're deeper, more flexible, and more profound. And you can do things at that deeper level, which are not good, just as you can do things on the level of cultural religion, which aren't good. So not really. I do think that there are deeper, more profound laws which govern how well things go at deeper levels of spirituality.
Yeah. I think where people come from when they say things like that is that they recognize that religions began the same way, based on love and compassion. But you know, when they look around the world today and they see various atrocities being committed in the name of a particular religion, if something gets lost in the translation, you know, with religion, you know.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, this is why I wrote the book more so than anything else, just to get people to appreciate the deeper dimension of their own spirituality in their own religion. Once you get to that deeper dimension, a realm of direct experience and feeling, you realize that all of the superficial differences in history, geography, ethnicity mean nothing. Okay. I mean, Orthodox Jews would no longer care if they can't build their temple in Jerusalem. Muslims wouldn't care if they can't have a caliphate. Right? Christians would reject the notion that Jesus is unique and so on, without abandoning him, and so on and so on. So all these ideas about religions being one greater than all the rest are what we need to reject. That's been the worst thing about religion, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, we live in many ways in a society that remains entrenched in materialism. And for those who are really steeped in their materialistic view, do you think that they miss out on living life to the fullest?
Oh, no question about it, because everybody sooner or later realizes that, you know, life's lessons, as they say, do bring us to a realization of the inherent pain, suffering, limitation, and having to give everything up, if only because we all get older. Our bodies all decay, our memory, physical capacities eventually fade, and all the wonderful things we do with those capacities fade as well. And with enough contemplation of that, you realize that there is a deeper dimension beyond it all, and we can contact that deeper dimension, which takes us across life and death. And death is not the end at all, far from it. But if you're stuck in material values, then you are going to think it is. And that will lead eventually to pain, suffering, and disillusionment, although it may not seem that way right now. Yeah.
It's, yeah, and it may not seem that way in the physical, but we have to be open to the possibility that those thoughts and feelings might affect us in the non-physical realm.
Yeah, and you know, that there are deeper dimensions of experience which you begin to, if you really get into meditation and, you know, basic practices like singing or chanting and meditation, contemplation, scriptural study, being around gurus, teachers, going on retreats and so forth. If you do that a lot, you really get into the spiritual search. You begin to access a kind of a blissful underlying state of unity and flow with everything. I'm not enlightened, far from it, but I think it exists, and I have begun to experience. For me, there's a lot. The universe features a lot of unity, flow, and joy which it didn't used to, because I saw through the cultural dimensions of my religious experience to a deeper state. And a lot of other people have as well, more and more every day.
Mm. Yeah, and I know, I mean, you mentioned, you know, sort of off the cuff that you're not enlightened. And certainly, you know, your background is somebody that has been, you know, I guess you would classify yourself as not only as an academic, but a spiritual seeker. So I guess that's a question that you get sometimes, maybe by students or just acquaintances, that, you know, David, are you enlightened? You know, what is enlightenment?
it cannot be defined or quantified or measured. I think it exists. I don't know if I have enough interest required to get there in this life, but I do know people. I do know ordinary folks, a bunch of ordinary folks who claim, who were long time, decades long seekers like myself, who had experience, a powerful transformation after powerful transformation after powerful transformation. And then they finally had an experience that blew away all their other experiences by a mile, and which they describe as complete and final. And these are ordinary folks, technical writers and garbage collectors and film producers and, you know, mechanics. And I do think it exists. And I think it is the same for everybody across the planet. It's out there. I really think that it does exist.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'd like to get into, because, you know, it's an area of expertise for you, and that's with dreams. And like in the realm in which we dwell and at the foundation, I mean, we talk about life after death a lot, and many people report having what they classify and what we often call visitation dreams, where they see a deceased loved one, and sometimes these dreams are very tactile. They report being able to see their loved one, touch them, hug them, smell them. So what are your thoughts about these visitation dreams, as compared to a so-called normal dream? You know, how do you differentiate the two?
I would say a visitation dream is truly, sincerely visitation if there is a powerful emotional response or if the dreamer otherwise finds the dream especially compelling and powerful in some way. It's definitely a visitation dream in that case. Quite often, though, meaningful people in our dreams function only as symbols. The example I like to use is involves Princess Di, Princess Diana, who, you know, a couple of decades ago died in a car accident and so forth. She became sort of a world princess mythologically, and she represents the queenly aspect in a lot of people, because we know all about her and her life story and so forth. So she may appear in a dream, or our parents may appear in a dream, but they may function only as symbols in that they represent some inner aspect of masculinity or femininity in the dreamer, and the dreamer can only really properly interpret the dream or come up with the most likely appropriate meaning of the dream if he takes that person symbolically and not literally. If there is a powerful feeling associated with the person, you know, some sort of emotional impact, a meaningful exchange, verbal, what have you, then sure, it is definitely a visitation dream.
Yeah, and such experiences can have a lasting effect on the recipient.
Absolutely.
Affect their grief.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when we have these. You know, non-visitation dreams, and as you mentioned, they could be symbolic, or perhaps they're just, a rehashing of the day's events. I mean, last night I had a dream that didn't make any sense to me. You know, I was rushing to make a connecting flight, and was having a lot of trouble and anguish trying to get there on time. I mean, when you have something like that, do these dreams have any meaning, or are they just your, you know, trash being thrown away by the brain? How would you describe such things?
Yeah, dreams are very interesting and paradoxical. Studies show that most people's dreams of most of the time are of ordinary humdrum things, just along the lines of what you're saying, often involving difficult, minorly negative elements and hassles and so on. But there's no question in my mind that on some level, in some way, all dreams, I mean, dreams for me are the ordinary human faculty for accessing beneficial psychic and spiritual knowledge. And at least, I mean, the majority of dreams for me are that way. In some profound way, all of the normal humdrum dreams are also like that. But I think definitely the more powerful dreams and symbolic dreams, which everybody has. All dreams, and this is Jeremy Taylor, who is probably the greatest dream theorist of this century, as far as I'm concerned, come in the service of health and wholeness. And how that applies to all the humdrum dreams like you're talking about, I don't know. But there are many which definitely do. Mm. So they are the ordinary way that we can all access the divine. We can talk about that forever. Go ahead. Sorry.
it's interesting. And, you know, when I look back, you know, in history, and I think, and you've written about it in your book, I mean, there have been many indigenous tribes in the past, or some still do engage in practices where they rely upon their dreams. You know, they meet every day and discuss the dreams as part of a community, and maybe they even plan their day or their future events based upon the dreams that people had. It's certainly, sometimes it seems like the ancients and the indigenous people knew a lot more about spirituality than we do today.
you get me started on dreams. I cannot tell you how woefully ignorant and how woefully ignored dreams are in most people's experience when it comes to the really important big questions about your spiritual future and so forth. Yeah, I mean, the most famous example, the Aborigines and the Dreamtime and so on. But everybody, you know, the ancients and more people today know how to incubate dreams. That is, sit down with a specific intention of dreaming about something meaningful. And you can do that. You can't make dreams happen. But you can strongly encourage the likelihood that a dream more or less like what you want to happen will happen. But it takes intention, work, and effort. And we need to, you know, I mean, God doesn't spoon feed us anything. We need to do our part to understand what God's trying to tell us. And dreams are, you know, you can study them and get into the symbology and so forth. But yeah, they're important. Yeah. Woefully misunderstood. Woefully ignored, unfortunately.
What about, have you ever personally been guided by your dreams?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been through many spiritual initiations. I mean, and a lot of people don't need to visit gurus like I did to have big spiritual breakthroughs and to begin to experience more powerful dreams. But after I had my big initiations with some of these teachers, a lot of dreams became very directive in very explicit ways. I began having a category of dreams that I call audio dreams, merely a voice speaking up inside the head. Not always the gurus, but just a voice. There actually, I have three or four what I call angels. One's the guru I follow. Two is the Hindu deity Ganesha, and two others are like just ordinary people, my current teachers who I see more often than my guru. So anyway, for one dream I had, for example. It was 2 seconds long. I was going to see this woman about 30 years ago, thinking of getting involved with this woman. And the night before I was going to call her, I had a 2-second audio dream. Two things, that woman nagging and a baby squalling. That told me everything I need to know.
In 2 seconds, that's...
stay away from that. If I hadn't heeded that dream, my life would be totally different.
So
that's a very atypical example, but that's what I'm coming up with right now. Oh yeah, dreams have been a big thing for me. I can talk about dreams all night.
Right. Well, you mentioned, you know, meditation, and meditation just keeps coming up no matter who we speak to. I mean, whether you're talking to a medium or even a scientist or an academic, you know, most people will say that meditation is the key to accessing information from unseen, you know, realms. So, I mean, what advice would you give to somebody that's not a meditator but would like to begin? Is there any, how do they start? I mean, a lot of people...
Yeah, well, the most important thing is don't define it so narrowly. It's not necessarily something that you do sitting down with your eyes closed. A lot of people can't do that. You know, so you need to have a practice involving movement, okay? I mean, there's a practice Buddhists do called Kinhin, K-I-N-H-I-N, which is a certain kind of walking. So you can do these slow contemplative movement exercises which is where some people are at in terms of the level of focus that they need. The best thing to do for meditation is, I mean, you can learn it on the cheap. You can go to a local meditation studio, but it helps a lot of people to shell out to shell out some money to a good teacher with a reputation, because that opens a space inside you for a teaching to enter more deeply. So I would, you know, check out any spiritual teacher, guru of any stripe who comes to town. Check them out. Do a movement technique if you have to. Visit a Buddhist, a Zen center. You can learn how to do this walking meditation called Kinhin, which is a lot easier than sitting with your eyes closed. Although I think everybody should aspire to be able to sit with their eyes closed and meditate. Not everybody can, and that shouldn't be where they start. Tons of ways to meditate. Mantras are the most common, but movement techniques are out there, and good teachers are out there to whom you should fork over some cash for a good workshop and really learn it, and you'll get a powerful experience. More likely for some people than if you just go to a meditation studio. If you do have longing and a desire to learn, then you won't need to pay anybody any money. But sometimes it does help some people to fork over a fee, because that does open a space inside you for a teaching to enter more deeply than it otherwise would.
Mm.
Yeah.
You mentioned before, angels. I mean, people sometimes use the term interchangeably, you know, angel or spirit guide, and
right.
So, I mean, do you believe that everyone has a spirit guide, whether or not they're aware of it? I mean, do you think that we all have help in that way?
Oh, absolutely, no question about it. I mean, if enlightenment exists and we're all going to the same place eventually, then there must be for each of us specific teachers in some sense or other, be they angels, you know, animal allies, human beings, deities from traditions, ascended masters, what have you. Know, and every person has above him or her, as it were, spirit guides waiting to be paid attention to when the person has enough awareness. That spirit guide may never manifest as anything physical or mental in a dream or physically or anything, but that entity is there, no question about it. What's going to guide us to this great exalted state above and beyond normal consciousness? This enlightenment is completely unexplainable and unfathomable and incomprehensible. So we get there through teachings, and those can only be effectively imparted by spirit guides. In some sense or other, we all have them. Absolutely. I'm convinced of that.
What about, the subject of myth? You know, I mean, I guess if you went down the street and you asked a sampling of people, you know, to describe or define a myth, the common answer would be a fictional story, you know.
Right.
But others and great scholars have written about myth in the past few decades, and they believe that the stories and dreams of cultures take on a life of their own. So, in subsequent generations. So, what are your views about myth and what value these mythical stories might have?
Myths are absolutely essential for human understanding of spirituality most of the time. They provide the basic pattern of understanding common affairs and situations in life from the spiritual standpoint. You've heard the phrase that myths are the dreams of cultures. You know, certain stories get told and virtually go into genetic memory down through the generations, and they become teaching tools. And of course, they can be taken in a completely literalistic, childish way and bent way out of proportion and used for completely wrong purposes. But, you know, overall, they do a great deal more good than harm. And they're essential for instruction for children, number one, because kids, of course, think more metaphorically than scientifically, but also amazingly for adult human beings, some of whom are scientists and are very much into data and have a very far sort of empirical intellect. They find themselves, the myth addresses a deeper level of their being because it's a powerful story which illustrates archetypes in reality. The deeper levels of reality, the deeper kind of structure of how everything works, human affairs, good, evil, and so forth, all that is set forth in myths, which are very, very important. Yes, I think so.
I mean, these archetypes and myths, you know, might have an effect on consciousness, and it's sort of an imprint that gets carried over, you know. So it's not inconceivable that, I don't know if you explained it in a biological way, but somehow these consciousness imprints, they start out as stories, but they become real as time goes by.
I think that the further you get in spirituality, the less important myths become. You begin to see through the, you know, the literalistic interpretation of them. You understand that they're completely metaphorical. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily relate to real life literally at all. Myth or allegory, that it's a story which has no literal truth, but which is meant to cultivate an attitude of reverence. You know, so you begin to see through them, though. They no longer, you realize that they're not literally true.
Yeah. And, you know, and other terms that are bandied about, especially when you look at survival of consciousness, I mean, people use the term mind and or consciousness or soul. That those are often used interchangeably, and do you think that's a mistake, or are they all simply terms for the essence of who we are?
I think that there needs to be a real consciousness of, the difference between mind and soul. And the term mind refers, I'm thinking offhand of the age-old philosophical puzzle from the Greeks, from the ancient Greeks on, of the mind-body duality, the mind-body interface, and what do they ever come together? But it turns out that mind and body are not different from each other. I think the most important thing is to understand that the concept soul does have meaning. It's God plus the most subtle aspect of whatever makes us an individual human being. Okay, deeper than that is pure God, if you will. But there is sort of a divine aspect to us, which is totally individual and unique. That would be the soul. Mm. And that does exist. And it does survive our death.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, do you think that parts of our soul, in other words, the soul, does it fragment? Do part of who we are, our essence, or our soul reside in one realm or multiple realms at once? That could lead into a discussion of reincarnation, but, is it possible that, for instance, our soul advances in the physical realm, but at the same time resides in unseen worlds?
Absolutely. I think, you cannot escape the notion of different levels of reality. So we have our physical reality, we have our physical reality right in front of us, but at the same time, there exists an infinite number of more subtle levels of reality right in front of us. So our soul, I'm thinking about the best known mystical theory connected with this is the four bodies from mystical Hinduism. There's a physical body, there's a subtler dream body, there's a causal body, and then there's what you could call the enlightenment body. So that they all exist at once at the same time. You just can't see the three out of four of them.
Right.
So reality is very mysterious, and these things exist. And I think after we leave the body, I mean, as you go back to source, truth, light, stuff begins to get stripped away. But again, it's interesting. There's like the heaven hell theory, like I talk about in my book, and then there's a karma reincarnation theory. And reincarnation has always made so much sense because everything cycles in the universe, be it plate tectonics or stars, galaxies, or the human soul is the most subtle of all created things. But everything cycles back and forth. That's the inherent appealing thing about reincarnation. So as you return to source, you don't go all the way back if you are meant to reincarnate. That starts to answer or comment on your question.
Okay. Well, we are going to go to a break. We're talking with Dr. David Lowe. The book is called Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice. It's an informal textbook for discerning seekers. Dr. Lowe's website is davidlowemsphd.com.
And no E on the name. David Lowe, LOWMSPHD.com.
Right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. David Lowe. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and they could be found on the web at windbridge.org. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. David Lowe. Again, the book, Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice, an informal textbook for discerning seekers. And By the way, there is a link on our website, an Amazon link, for those that are interested in purchasing Dr. Lowe's book.
200 pages, lots of pictures in it to make it easy reading.
Right. And one thing I'd like to get into, it I didn't ask you before, a lot of people, obviously, that we speak to report these after-death communications, and they come in many different forms. And, you know, of course, mediumship contacts and near-death experiences and deathbed visions. And
right.
And then all the way, there's all sorts of signs that people receive and dream visits. And for some people, they seem to get these communications like gangbusters, and others never do. And it's always a quandary because those who don't always question why. So why would you, you know, what answer would you give to somebody that says, you know, Dr. Lowe, how come I don't receive any communication from any of my deceased loved ones?
Yeah, that's a really profound question with lots of wrinkles in the answers. I mean, it's a cop-out to say it's your karma, so I won't do that, although there certainly is an aspect of truth to that. I guess, you know, there needs to be, I think most of the time in those kind of situations, a lot of sheer intensity of the emotional attachment involves, you know, issues that people have to be resolved, how much or how little grief or anger is involved. If there's not that much, there won't be much of a need to communicate. Second, is there desire for growth and change on the part of the deceased and the living person or persons involved? So if there's no desire for change, whatever emotional complexes are left behind are more likely to stay kind of frozen the way they are. So people sometimes want to change on the surface, but deeper down they really don't. I'll give you an example. Let's say there's a surviving adult who has kind of a childish level of dependence on the transition person. That person might feel immobilized and not able to get on with this life because the person's gone. So he wallows in self-pity for a while. In that case, the communication would be predisposed not to take place, since that would encourage him to grow up and move on more quickly than he's willing to. What's interesting is that, you know, the depression that the living person experiences, spiritually speaking, I think is the same thing as the emotional attachment being felt by the deceased person. It's the same thing felt in two different ways. And also, you know, one thing to be aware of also, not all deceased people are granted the same powers. I think that varies a lot. My mother had more power than average. She caused a number of very strange things to happen around our house after she left. And, you know, then there's a larger question of karma. Maybe you're not meant to have that. Maybe the lesson is you can learn and resolve all the issues you want to by simply contemplating and coming to terms with the death rather than trying to do something about it and communicate. So, yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah, you raise a lot of valid points. I mean, a lot of people just assume that because, you know, you're dead, that you instantly have the ability to communicate across dimensions. It might be something that has to be learned and something that those in the other realm, they need help with the same way that we may need help in the physical. You know?
Yeah, so, I think also one thing that really needs to be appreciated is the value of traditional religion here is very great. I mean, some of these, if your denomination is at all liberal-minded about this sort of thing, you know, pastors and priests are trained to answer these questions for people. And, you know, I mean, the more liberal denominations will often counsel a person very effectively in that regard on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. Or just, you know, the value of basic belief and ritual, faith, prayer, regular prayer, and just guide, just, you know, faith that you will come to terms with the death. If this communication doesn't seem to be happening, you're doing everything you can with your dreams, with therapists and so forth, you're still bothered by it, then just the knowledge that, you know, God's watching, there is a divine presence, there is a sense of destiny and karma and fate, which will work out as it's supposed to. And that, I think, carries most people through these kinds of crises.
Mm. Now, you've spent a lot of time engaged in various rituals and spiritual practices. I mean, have you do you have experience with drumming and chanting? And is that something that is effective in a spiritual quest?
It's funny you should ask me that, because those are my primary practices. Yeah, I love philosophy, and I'm basically I'm an intellectual, but the most powerful practice for me has always been chanting. That is the powerful effect, which vibration at a deep level, at a deeper level than words, has on the heart. So I mean, there are two levels that chanting, singing can be powerful. One is the meaning of the words and sentences. Or on the more mystical level, many Hindu and Buddhists, and also Christians and Muslims and Jews, will chant the same few syllables over and over and over and over again. So the power comes not from the meaning of the words, but from the actual vibration at a really deep level of the sound itself. And yeah, that's been my most powerful practice. I play drums, actually, in the yoga group, which I'm a part of.
Huh. So you're somebody who's well-versed in vibration. Yeah,
that's a very profound topic. Oh, my God. You know, Shabda, the Vak, associated with Hindu philosophy. It's very well-developed, powerful philosophy, especially in Hindu ancient Hindu and ancient Jewish thought. That's well-developed.
The you'd be an interesting person to ask this to, but what about the notion where a lot of people in the kind of so-called spiritual community will always say there's no such thing as coincidences? Do you believe that there are coincidences or not?
That is, again, sort of a loaded question.
Okay.
Everything happens for the best. There are no coincidences. There are no accidents. And that's kind of the standard New Age response. I mean, for me though, I think it's certainly a practical notion to believe in coincidences, insofar as we want to distinguish some events as being more meaningful than others. The notion of coincidence does have value if we choose to discount something which seems important, but which commonsensically obviously isn't, then we can call it a coincidence, and we don't have to attribute meaning to it. But other things, of course, we do want to attribute meaning to, so it's something more than just a coincidence. It's synchronous. Something can be synchronous or something can be a coincidence, the two opposite things at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, you can talk for an hour about that as well, but with synchronicity. What about, I hate to keep shifting gears on you, but I want to get as much in as possible. I know some very astute academics who treat astrology as any other discipline of science. They take it very seriously. I mean, what do you think of astrology?
It took me years to appreciate astrology. But the fact is that, you know, we need alternate maps of reality. And it's any way we have to break out of our rational worldview is valuable. You can think of astrology this way. You know, there is a grand divine harmony in everything. In the great, devastatingly precise and vast universe in which everything interacts the way it's supposed to, all things occur in the natural order of being and so forth. On a local level, there are patterns of how things happen. On a grand level, there are patterns of how things happen. And on the local level, in say the realm of David Lowe here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the northeastern United States and planet Earth, things happen in a certain way in a pattern which is different than it would happen in California or whatever. So the particular patterns that I'm dealing with, it's going to be best if I go along with those mystical patterns than if I don't. So I think there is something to it. And interestingly, of course, different cultures have different astrological systems, different meanings associated with the same constellations and so on. But underneath that, the notion is sound, that there is a divine harmony to everything. And there is a sense in which all of us can conform to an ideal way that each of us is supposed to live and do our lives. And astrology is one way of maybe finding it or appreciating that likelihood.
We find that
another thing about astrology, you know, saints and all the traditions value it. That's one reason I kept on trying to appreciate it until I finally did. Sorry.
A lot of people, especially we come into contact with so many people that are bereaved and in grief, and that grief is very often a trauma that's a trigger for a search for a meaning and purpose. You know, is there any meaning to what just happened? And the big question, and it's not even fair to ask you this, but what your opinion is, but if I asked David Lowe, what's the purpose of our physical existence, what would you say?
It's to go back to source and to find source and joy and beauty. You know, life is meant to be enjoyed, but it's also meant to cause us to suffer and think about stuff. You know, I mean, one of the greatest questions always discussed in academic departments of philosophy and by religion scholars and teachers is, why is there a creation at all? Right? Because if God's so perfect and beautiful and whole and absolute just as he is, why did he need to create anything? You know, creation is, God is thought, most mystical philosophers, pretty much all of them agree with the notion that God and creation are the same thing. They're simultaneous. So creation exists just for sport. It's a playful, joyful, loving thing that comes out of nowhere in complete bliss, harmony, joy, and accord with divine will. We are God, right? So, and the point of life is to appreciate that, is to find that joy, is to see through the mystery, is to go through all the trouble and starving and difficulty and problems to see the divine harmony underneath it all. That seems to be the purpose of everything, as far as I can tell. You know, to just find the joy, yeah, in spite of all the difficulty.
So you would subscribe to the theory that, you know, that we are placed here to learn.
Absolutely, no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, what else could we possibly be doing here? I mean, there is joy. There is source, life, truth. What I call God's self, source, truth, light, it exists, you know, and that's why we're here, is to find it and to have more fun in life than we would if we don't.
Yeah. Well, I also think that our consciousness is evolving, you know, and perhaps our purpose, if not our main purpose or one of our purposes, is to recognize that we're not finite beings of Earth, you know, that we are part of the universe and our essence does continue after, physical death. And you know, if we can pick up that knowledge during our physical lifetime, that is very beneficial, not only while we're here, but afterwards.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the joy and love and potential for fulfillment is just unbelievable. And the more of us can acquire these deeper perspectives and take a real interest in these eternal and deeper matters, the greater harmony will start existing everywhere else. I mean, so, but for example, people who, you know, they may on the surface believe that all religions are the same and so forth, and they're very polite and courteous to people in other faiths. But deeper down, if they hang on to the notion that their religion is the best, then there is an internal psychological tension that contributes to all the stuff happening in the world on the physical level. So we need to get rid of these foundational notions which keep us attached to certain ways of being, certain ideas, which we just need to get over to see the underlying unity beneath. And that takes work. It takes study. It takes practice. It takes perspective. But it's there for all of us to access and find. And that's what I hope my book does for at least a couple of people on Earth,
Well, you know, and I think one of the values, of your book and what you've been talking about is that in the process we lose a great deal of our fear. Many of us live our lives in total fear and fear of death and fear of annihilation, because we think of ourselves purely as our physical, you know, body and brain. So I think you get somewhat liberated if you think of yourself as a spiritual being versus a purely physical being. Is that true?
Oh gosh. It's again, just look at the evidence. Look at the purely anecdotal but completely recurring evidence from around the world in all cultures and all peoples, all levels of education and so forth, of people who, you know, have powerful transformational dreams, of people who have near-death experiences, of people who have hunches and feelings. It just somehow they just knew to get out of the way. Somehow they just knew that something would happen, which then did happen. You know, there are deeper, more profound dimensions to life. And obviously there exists levels of fulfillment that many of us don't even believe exists. Right. You know, and so it's there. We just have to think more deeply than the typical material concerns that most of us have.
Yeah. So do you think it's important to rely on our intuition?
We're going to be forced to. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying, you know, do you think it's beneficial for us to, you know, we call it gut feelings, but to pay attention to our intuitiveness more often and be guided by our intuition?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need to immerse ourselves in the mystery, whatever that mystery is for us. So if there are things you're wondering about, or you can't figure out the circumstances around something that's important to you, what to do in your career, whether to divorce somebody, how to advise your children on a certain issue, whatever the situation is, you can sit down and contemplate and ask for guidance. And there are effective ritual ways of doing that, which you can look at my book and so forth. But yeah, that's important. Can you give me a specific example or situation that you might want to ask about or whatever?
Well, you know, just a lot of people in daily life dismiss things. It could be something as simple as, you know, they're driving their car and they always go right at a certain place, and all of a sudden they have some sort of a voice or a feeling that they should go left, but they dismiss it because that's woo-woo stuff.
Right.
Very often there's a reason that they got that, you know. But if you don't believe that the mind can act separately from the brain, then that stuff doesn't exist, and you think it's just your imagination, and you dismiss it. So,
nice.
So
sometimes that's all it is. I would say take that left turn. It either will be an important thing that you otherwise wouldn't have done. It'll turn out to be an important intuition, or maybe you're just tricking yourself in some way, and maybe you'll notice a pattern of how you're tricking yourself, in which case you can maybe get some kind of therapy or some kind of insight into your own unreliable human mind, and then tune into a deeper level of real intuition instead of what seems like a shallower level of intuition which misguides you. So yeah, I mean, your mind can trick yourself. We can all be tricked by our minds due to various issues which we have at different levels of our being. And there are deeper levels of real intuition. We don't always know which is which, but we can only discover by going for it. You're right. Take that left turn.
Right. Well, we've reached the end of our time. We have been talking with Dr. David Lowe. You could find out much more about Dr. Lowe and the book by going to David, D-A-V-I-D, Lowe, L-O-W-M-S, PhD.com, the book Universal Spiritual Philosophy and Practice. We thank you so much for being with us, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, Bob.
All right. Take care. You're welcome, and have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Max Javitt, Lynn LeClaire, Ed O'Brien, Linda Ellis, Alex Hanna, Veronica James, Rich LeBly, Lauren Ramnath, Vince Mataya, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, James Rafferty, Donna Mello, Stanley Mullen, Marianne Pierschke, Glenna Irwin, David Hayes, Michael Tim, Helen Montalto, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Ingram, and Tina Young. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.